Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast today is June 28th, I think.
No, right? 27th.
It's the 29th?
No, 27th. It's the 28th. You right. My bad.
I thought I had it right today. So Nia's not here, as everybody can hear. She's at the Big John Legend show down at the Garden.
Yeah.
Working. So we had to knock it out without her. We didn't want to miss the holiday weekend. For everybody, you know, it's a lot of stuff going on and stuff, so we wanted to keep up and stay abreast, you know, with the current events as they are.
Absolutely.
Yes, how you feeling, man?
I'm good, bro. I'm good. Had a long LA trip, so I'm back.
Yeah, we're gonna get into that.
Yeah.
We're gonna get into the whole BT Awards thing and all that stuff, you know. This might as well just start, man. Jump right in, especially since Nine here. We might as well jump right into some sports, man. So, a couple of big transactions in the NBA today. The Knicks fired Phil Jackson, and Chris Paul was traded to the Houston Rockets for not much. And Patrick Beverley, Sam Decker, and maybe somebody else, but like no superstars or nothing like that. So now it's going to be Chris Paul and James Harden in the backcourt for the Rockets. And the rumors are that the Rockets are still going after Carmelo Anthony to leave the Knicks and play the three in Houston.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah, that's the rumor. So Houston's trying to create their own little super team. And obviously if they get, I don't know if they'd have to do a trade to Melo, or could he... I don't know how it would
they
work.
Have to.
Would
be. They have to trade for Melo. He has a no trade clause, so he has to approve it.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Yeah. So he doesn't have a no trade clause. Yeah. So So that's a lot of changes. How you feeling about all that?
Phil was long overdue. You know, Phil is one of those really smart guys, and the time passes them by and everyone knows it but them. He's stubborn. He doesn't want to adjust. He doesn't want to acknowledge that the game is different, not only from when he played but when he coached. He treated Melo like shit. He shitted on him at every chance and every turn he had. He's made some silly moves under the guise of, you know, I'm the smart guy. Like everybody said, the Derek Fisher hire was a bit premature, and it wasn't a good idea, and that shit was awful. It turned out awful.
Same with the Rambis hire.
These are just
kind of forget about that one.
But this is just sort of indicative. You know, Phil, as much as he portrays himself to be this, you know, sort of liberal, hippie, progressive guy, is still very good old boys network. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
if you
absolutely
fucked with him, then you good, and if not, then you ain't good. And
yeah,
you know, Porzingis, you know, skipped out on the exit interview, and then, you know, he gets on the radio and says, oh, you know, nobody's ever skipped out, and it was like several instances where players didn't go to their exit interviews with him, and like, whatever, man, like, you know, it's a shitty season. Is that what your exit interview is about? Like, how bad the fucking season was? Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah, it was definitely, I mean, Knicks fans are rejoicing at Phil going. I mean, he still got James Dolan there, but Knicks fans are rejoicing that James Dolan's going. They're talking about, the rumor is they're going after, I forget his name now, the black cat that's the GM up in Toronto, who's
also
the
GM.
And, Yeah, he was a GM in Denver when Carmelo and them went to the conference finals with J.R. Smith and them back in Denver. He's a young guy. I don't even know if he's 40 years old.
I think he's just barely 40. But that's the thing, though. You know, this is one of those instances, man, where I think we got to look at James Dolan and say, yo, he really did move out of Phil's way. He didn't meddle. He wasn't meddlesome. Phil had the checkbook. You know what I'm saying? Like, this ain't on Dolan. None of this is on Dolan, man. Like,
it's really not. He said he let Phil do what he wanted to do. He said he really stayed out of the way. He didn't, you know, he didn't meddle. He didn't force trades or force, you know, anything like that. And this is all Phil Jackson's mess. You know, it was a mess when he got there, for sure.
But he
didn't fix the mess.
Phil is one of those people that is from that whole era of coaching, like Larry Brown, you know, I don't play rookies and I don't do this and you gotta, you know, like, get the fuck out of here, man. Like, the dude is, he's a stud, okay? Porzingis is a stud. Melo is a bona fide, like, professional scorer. I don't care what system it is, you throw Melo in there, he giving you 27 a night.
Yeah. You're right. So, I mean, Melo going to Houston could be Melo. I mean, you know, the window will be small, but Melo, James Harden and Chris Paul in Houston for at least the next couple seasons, you know, with maybe one more piece could be really interesting.
I think really. I heard today that he went on record as saying he doesn't want to leave New York. And I think that, you know, the fact that his family life is presumably in shambles and his wife is not just up and following him. And, you know, he doesn't have any leverage in this right now in terms of his marriage. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And I don't think he wants to uproot his son and, you know, having him shipping around and moving around in these years. I really do think Melo, and also too, don't underplay Wall Street. You know, Melo,
He's got a lot of investments, a lot of stuff.
He's backing a venture capitalist outfit. So, listen, obviously there's bread in Houston, and clearly you can still operate from there. But I just don't think he wants to leave this quality of life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if
shit. I think we just lost Jeff. And
talking. Okay.
All right, we're back.
So let me know you're back. Okay. Yeah. So it's gonna be interesting to see how the next play out next season. And then Chris Paul to the Rockets. Like I said, looks like there's a lot of dissension on the Clippers between Chris Paul and Blake and Doc Rivers, because a lot of Clippers are mad at Doc Rivers giving Austin Rivers so much playing time.
Yeah, I mean, Doc is, I mean, once you draft your son, man, like, I don't know how, it's very difficult. Like, either you treat him like shit, right, and then you have to come home to that, or you don't, and then you have to deal with your players. And I don't necessarily know. I think that people are just uber sensitive about it on both sides. You know, I think they might be looking at how he's treating Austin probably through a jaded lens, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, but I read today that last season there was a proposed trade for Carmelo and Sasha Vujovic to go to the Clippers in exchange for Austin Rivers, Paul Pierce, and Jamal Crawford. And Doc said no to the trade. And that's when he really lost the team, because they was like, okay, you obviously are picking your son over making the team better. Because why are we keeping your son and not getting Carmelo Anthony?
He also could have been looking at it from the, like, I don't know what Jamal Crawford's contract is, but I know Paul Pierce was an expiring contract. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes they like to be able to just let those contracts roll off their books. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. By trading them, they might have had to get Melo. Now you signing into another long-term deal. I mean, I'm not. There are people who really live and breathe that shit. You know, just the ins and outs of salary caps and all of that. I'm just not one of them. Obviously, you pull that trigger. That's not really a hard thing to discuss. But again, Melo still had the no trade clause, so it don't matter who's talking about what. If Melo is not, if you get info that Melo ain't gonna, you know, co-sign it, then why even put it out there?
Yeah. So who knows? But yeah, but it's so meaning to say the NBA season is now 20, it's now 12 months a year. So it's like
exactly,
you know, it's gonna be a lot more moves that happen after this. This is just the beginning of the like tip of the iceberg, you know. Hey, so I went to see the Pac movie.
Okay.
Did you see it yet?
No, I have no intentions on going, and that's. So yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna go. I'm not pressed to see the Pac movie again. I just feel like I get that this is, you know, history. It's just something that I was around for, and so I'm not very interested in giving 2 hours to a person that has been documented and docu-followed and documentaried. You know what I'm saying? To death. Like, there is nothing else to know about Tupac Shakur. There really isn't.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think one of the... I thought about it after I watched the movie. I think one of the differences, the many differences, I should say, between this movie and the NWA movie is, you know, Pac obviously is not here. His mom passed away as well. His, you know, his cousins, the Outlaws, and them are not really... you know, out there as far as, you know, profile. So, like, Dre and Ice Cube are around, you know what I'm saying, obviously, and very, still very high profile.
Household people. Names.
Yeah, so when they make a movie and go out and promote it and talk about it and everything, it's a really big deal. Whereas there was nobody really to even promote this movie except the kid who played Tupac, and nobody, you know, besides him looking like Tupac, nobody even really knows his real name. Yeah. So it's no real kind of driver to the film, and you're seeing that. Like, I went over the weekend past, and the theater was, I mean, it wasn't even half full, dude. It was light. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, like, the interest of the movie is definitely, like, not what it was with the NWA film. Like you said, I mean, I went to see it just to kind of say I went to see it. I wasn't really that excited, but it's okay. It's not, I don't think it's as terrible as people were trying to say it is. It's not great either. Like, I'm not getting it.
Of course, and that's the thing, man. Of course it's not. Look, I'm going to say this, and I'm just speaking from the heart, man. Like, people are really, really overly and weirdly sensitive about Tupac. It is like, you can't say nothing. And the moment you say anything, or if it's not verbatim, it's like all hell breaks loose, man. And folks are, I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't, you know, God bless them. I'm not even taking shots at those people. But like, you can't even have a discourse about Tupac. You can't. Like, you just can't have a civil, you can't have a civil sort of balanced, nuanced discussion about somebody who is complex. He's a complex person. This isn't just your run-of-the-mill dude. We get that. But like, the moment you start to try to dive a little bit into some of the, you know, quite frankly, some of the hypocrisies that he, you know, that he went through. He was young. He was 25. And so I think that when we see him, we see him now, right? And people see him now or think about him now, and they think of this grown adult man, and we really don't process the fact that, dude, he was 25. He was going through all of that shit.
He was 25 when he died.
That's my point. He was going through all that shit at 22, 23.
Yeah, exactly. When he was in juicing all that shit, like you say, he was like 21, 22 years old. He was a kid.
Exactly. So, you know, and that's the thing, man. It's like, there's such an extreme, you know. I personally think he's an icon for the culture in the same way that I think Hollywood has James Dean. And no one looks at James Dean as this, you know, iconic actor in terms of his ability and his skill. right? They think about the images of him and sort of what he symbolized and things of that nature. And that's kind of how I see Pac. I don't think he was a great rapper. You know what I mean? I just don't. I mean, I don't think he was the worst rapper ever either. And it's like, and that's the problem. It's like you have to be on such an extreme side of the coin on everything. I don't think he was a great actor. I think he often played characters that were very close to him. I just, you know, that doesn't mean he wasn't talented. You know what I'm saying? It's like you can have a bit of nuance in a conversation, but, you know, certain people, you just can't have it. And he's one of those people.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, fortunately.
Shit. All right, we good now.
All right. Yeah, so, I had a meeting with Pac, back at a job. We were looking at his cousins who turned out to be the Outlaws later. But they were little kids at the time. They were called the Thoroughheads. And, Barry was late to the meeting. So me and Pac ended up talking for like about a half hour, 45 minutes, you know, and it was right after, he shot Juice. And so he was telling me all about how, when he finished shooting Juice and he left New York, he had beef all over the city because the Bishop character, he said he couldn't shake it. You know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes sense.
You know, I became Bishop and I could never shake the character. Like, I was Bishop, like, nah. Hold on.
What is that? They
shopping
over there. I'm standing over here.
Adjacent
to the hood.
What is that?
Is that me?
No, I think that's me, but I don't know where it's coming from.
I don't know either.
Okay, I got it. It was a tab that started playing music. Sorry, y'all. So, he was saying that he couldn't shake the Bishop character, and it really like it took him a long time to be able to come out of character. He said when he was basically Bishop 24/7 around New York. So when he would go to clubs, when he would go out, he would be Bishop. He'd be beefing and fighting and, like, you know, trying to get at niggas like all the time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and we talked about music. Obviously, we talked about his cousins, you know, who became Outlaws later. And I'll bring that back around to how that was relevant. Later on when I saw him, you know, when he came out of prison and he was with the West Coast and he was like, you know, going so hard for the West Coast thing, in my mind I kept saying, oh, this guy's, he's being Bishop again. Well, you know what I'm saying? Like, he became like a West Coast version, I should say, of that character, like superly, overly aggressive, you know, person, which is why, like, everybody has all these stories about, you know, Pac would give money to families and Pac would take a girl to the prom and Pac would, like, cook, because it was almost like when he was doing that West Coast shit and going so hard, it was like he was playing a character. Like, that's not, I'm not saying he was a punk or anything like that, but, like, that was a small part of who he really was.
From the outside looking in, because I don't know him personally, and it seems that the people who do know him or did know him personally, it seems like no one really wants to kind of admit that. Like, no one really wants to sort of lay that out and say he really sort of got swallowed up in the persona that became a part of his life. You know what I'm
saying?
Exactly,
literally exactly what happened.
And that's what I feel like.
He predicted it to me basically that day when we were in a conference room, you know?
And that's what's weird about the entire, you know, when people talk about him, it's like they tend to leave out such chunky parts that would do anything to sort of smear or give the impression that he wasn't this complete badass outlaw, you know, that he had to be, you know, you know, it's just, to be honest, man, it's weird. And it's one of the people that I just try to stay away from talking about, because there was never, I literally have never had a balanced discussion with a Pac fan about him. You know what I'm saying? It's just damn near impossible.
Yeah, and then years later, he had passed away by this point, so this is probably 90, I guess this was 90, he died in 96, right?
So 97.
90.
No, no, no. Yeah, 96. I'm sorry. September 96.
Died, 96. Biggie died in 97. Yeah. Yeah. So 98, I guess. Interscope was going through a lot of issues with their shareholders because of, you know, quote, you know, gangster rap. And they didn't want Interscope to put out gangster music because their Pac had died. There was a lot of violence, East Coast, West Coast thing. And shareholders were getting very nervous. Mm-hmm. So Jimmy Iovine called Barry and was like, yo, I want you to fly out. We got some business. I got some a business proposal for you. I want you to come out to L.A. So me, Barry, Jeff Fenster was the head of A&R at the time. I think it was just us three, actually. It might have been the business affairs guy, Dan Zucker, but I think it was just us three. We flew out to L.A. Nobody knew we were going. Like, it was like some clandestine shit. Like, nobody knew we was going. Mm. We go out to L.A., whatever. We get to, you know, get out there and get settled. Boom. We go to Jimmy's office, you know, the next day, and we had this long meeting. And Jimmy was like, look, I got a proposal. I can't put out rap music right now because I got too, it's too much heat on me. It's too much going on. But I got this Pac album ready to go. And I want to put it out, you know, like he's just died. I think it was maybe the first official album after he died. And people are calling for it. And, you know, the artwork is done. The video is done. Everything's done. We want to give it to you and you can put it out. Obviously, we'll split the profit with you and so on, but it has to come out under the Jive banner. So after we met with Jimmy for a while, Miss Afeni came. Mm-hmm. With the Outlaws. So we're in the conference room and one of the Outlaws looks at me. And the Outlaws actually in the Pac movie as grown adults. You know. Oh, anyway, right. I was looking at me, he said, I know you. And I was like, really? Because they're like West Coast kids, you know? So yeah. I was like, where do you know me from? He was like, we was the Thoroughheads. I was like, really? That was y'all? Like, I was like these little kids. And I was like, that was bugged that they still remembered me. So then, you know, we had this long talk with Afeni, and then me and Afeni ended up having kind of like side conversations. And she was at that point, you know, obviously not on, you know, drugs or nothing like that. And she was like a really, really, really sweet lady, like really nice, very warm. And you could tell she was like that warm, she was like your aunt. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like that warm black lady who's definitely been through some shit, but came out on the other side. You know, the Outlaws would like revered her, you know what I'm saying? Like literally would have took bullets for her. And then, subsequently, Miss Afeni called me a couple more times afterwards when they were building a Tupac memorial in Atlanta. She called me to get us drives to give money towards the, building a memorial, and we did. So we had a couple more conversations, you know, over the years.
Okay.
Again, I can't say like I knew her, like it was like, you know, like a friend or anything. But you know, I had interactions with her for sure, and I really liked her a lot. She was a very sweet lady. So I mean, watching the movie was kind of like, for me, I was a guy like a little different because I was like, well, you know, again, I'm not saying I knew Pac, and I'm not saying I knew Miss Afeni or anything like that, but I had interactions with both of them, so it was kind of interesting to watch the movie and thinking about those interactions, you know, like, damn, you know, it's kind of crazy, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, but I say, you know, for everybody, you know, go on.
And
go
I wouldn't, yeah, I mean, and I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't even be too surprised or too shocked with the way that the drop-off was for the movie. I think the movie did $26 million its first weekend, which seems pretty good.
I think it was 28, actually.
Yeah, if that movie cost more than $12 million, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, I don't know what the budget is, but you're right. It's probably something like that. You know, it's not a lot, you know? And then the other thing was Power premiered.
Yes.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, I did. Yep.
Yeah, I watched it. I actually watched it Sunday morning because I knew the BET Awards were coming on Sunday night, and I didn't want to try to watch both, you know?
Same thing I did.
Yeah. So what'd you think about the premiere?
I thought the premiere was good. I mean, I've given up some of the more technical issues that I have with Power, and I look at it in a very purely entertainment way right now.
When you say technical issues, what do you mean?
Like, you are basically being demoted to third chair because you have a personal relationship. You and dude were having an affair. Why would you ever be on premises to serve a warrant is beyond my comprehension. That just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's one thing I couldn't understand. I was like, how can Angela be on this case when she was fuck Greg? It was fucking yes. Greg. And
the fucking, most, like no, it's the possible? Warrant. I'm like, dude, any good lawyer worth their weight would get whatever you found in that place tossed out. Like, that's crazy.
And maybe that will come up.
Yeah. Like maybe that is what it... But that's what I'm saying. Like, dude, the feds don't have a 94-95% conviction rate for nothing. So I just feel like, hey, you know, maybe you go get a fed and, you know, give them a little consulting money and maybe let them, you know, come in and just sort of give you some technical standpoints. But overall, look, I love the way the show is shot. I love the way it looks. I'm getting a little tired of the Kanan character in the way it is right now. It's just weird to me, and I don't really understand why Dre just didn't kill him. I mean, I couldn't wrap my head around that. You could, you know what I'm saying? I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I wonder where the Kanan character is going to go to. Like, is he going to just? I'm feeling like I really feel like at the end of this season, the Kanan character has to like. Die for respect, you know. We got to move on from terrorizing Ghost and his family. You can't do it like every season. It's got to come to a culmination.
Yeah, that's my point. You know? It's actually a little tiring.
Right? Like, please? It is.
Yeah.
It is. I was interested in the way they brought back. Lala's
character. Yeah. I mean, I kind of felt like they didn't really kill her. Because they didn't kill her actually on the show. I was surprised. I thought she just sort of ran off, and they just couldn't.
Yeah, I didn't know what happened, but I didn't know Tommy. You know, I looked out for her or whatever. So that kind of gave Tommy like, it kind of made Tommy in a good light. Oh, he's not a bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but overall, I thought it was a good first week. I mean, we're gonna stick with it and watch it all season long. But it was a good way to start the season.
And it's an entertaining show. You know what I'm saying? Like that, you know, the other,
it is.
It's entertaining. It's shot very well. And I mean, I think they have solid actors in there. I mean, you know, there are a couple people there that you kind of cringe a little bit when they got speaking lines, but you know, God bless them.
What do you think about Charlie Murphy?
It was hard to watch because he looked really sick. You know what I'm saying?
He really did.
He
looked terrible.
Yeah, he didn't look good at all. And it was just, it was just kind of weird to watch, man. It was just kind of weird to watch. Yeah. But, you know, that's what...
Knowing that he's going now.
Yeah,
you know?
And you know... Listen, I mean, like everybody always says, he was a real trooper, man. So of course he was going to rock out to the last minute, to the last day. So
absolutely,
and that's what it looked like, you know.
Yeah, it was hard to watch, but I guess on the other side, I kind of appreciate 50 and I guess the other people in the show for giving him that opportunity. You know, they knew how he looked. You know, you know he
absolutely
looked,
yeah
healthy. It was his status, but they decided to still give him a shot. So I had to you know, you got to respect that because they could have easily just been like, hey man, we're gonna move on to somebody else. Real quick on a music thing, the SZA album came out over a week ago now. It was almost 2 weeks ago, two Fridays ago. I've been listening to it. It's a really good album. It's kind of like the perfect album for like a 20-something-year-old girl who's like trying to figure it out. You know, like she's
okay.
You know, she's been, you know, she's a side chick on the album. Niggas are fucking her off. But the interesting thing is, what she's doing is like she's a side chick on the album. Niggas are fucking her off, but she's also doing savage shit to niggas too.
Okay.
So she's not a victim. She's not a victim on the album. She's like, yeah, and I was, I was fucking your friend while you was away. So whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, so okay. It kind of goes both ways. It's kind of in a weird way, an empowering album for young women, you know? Okay. I know young women seem to love the record. She seems to, you know, getting a lot of love and a lot of publicity. So I just wanted to kind of tell people that. And then, we got a whole album coming out tomorrow night at midnight.
Okay. Yeah.
Are you excited?
I'm not excited, but I'm going to listen. You know, it's one of those things, again, you know, he can be that type of artist as well, where it's like, you either have to love everything Jay does, or, you know, you're a hater, or you know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm not excited about a new Jay album. I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not like geeked. I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to listen to it. And of course I would always go and support and do those sorts of things. Cause I'm not a fan of throwing away our artists or making our artists feel like they can't have a space to create. But I'm also at a point where I don't necessarily know that the last couple of times he's made music has really been, great for me, you know, as a consumer. It hasn't been great for me, and maybe that's where I am in life. You know what I'm saying? It can, I don't know, but you know, I listen to it for a couple of days, and then boom, I'm good.
I'm the same way. It's also, you know, he's doing no walk up marketing. I don't know what they plan on doing after the album, but previous to the album, the only thing they've been doing is like these little, you know, visual kind of things with the 444 thing, but like, that's it. He's not, as far as I know, he's not, you know, doing any television or interviews and stuff like that. So it's also interesting because like the heat around the album is not what it usually is because there's nothing surrounding it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, also too, I mean, I think people, you know, feel like, I think they're doing something with the Samsung and you know, listen, Jay.
Oh, so title, I mean, he's got a title to get the album signed.
Yeah, and I mean, Jay is in. It's hard to get that sort of attention when you're out in the light, right? Like, it's not like Jay is reclusive and he's, you know, you don't really have access to him. Like, no, you have a lot of access to him. You know, he's, you know, a new dad, like, you see him.
He just had twins. So he's not trying to be outside running around.
Exactly.
You know?
And that also, I feel like, is a part of the process. Like, I just don't think people feel the same about Jay in that way. You know what I'm saying? And his core is older. You know, 45-year-old motherfuckers are just
much
not
older.
Yeah, like 45-year-old dudes are not geeked like that for anything.
Yeah, it is. Oh, Jay, she came out today. I gotta go buy this to it right now. Yeah. I'll get to it. You know, I gotta take these kids to the.
Exactly.
I gotta take these kids to get their hair cut.
I gotta run, you know, run my mama stuff down to Costco. And when I come back,
I gotta get my oil change and you know, and the garage door open ain't working. Exactly. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, but obviously, you know, we'll take a listen to it, and next week we'll give y'all a review on that. By the way, also just on my movie shit, I've been kind of heavy on it. So I also saw Wonder Woman.
Okay. What'd you think?
A couple weeks ago, it was good. I mean, it's a good action movie. I mean, you know, it's good. It's good. I mean, you'll definitely go see it if you're out and about, you know, you got a day to kill or whatever, like, go see it. It's good. So, I mean, you know, it's not like the best one I've ever seen, but it was a good movie. You know, the girl plays Wonder Woman, did a good job. You know, it's got some interesting kind of, from a planet of all women. So it's kind of like interesting how like these women are getting along on the planet and there's no men there, you know, but they still get along. It's like a kind of, you know, it's a lot of subtle, messages throughout the film, you know. It was pretty good, you know. By the way, let's talk a little bit, because we haven't really talked much about Queen Sugar, which is actually on right now. So this is episode 3 tonight, right?
I'm really not sure. I think I made it to. I think I made it to episode 2 of like season 1, and I just felt.
Are you checked out?
I didn't check out. Honestly, I fell behind, and I just, you know, I haven't.
Go back up.
Yeah, I haven't binged. It's one of those shows where I feel like it's, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but it's a lot of energy. Like it. I remember watching it, and I felt like. Yeah, it takes a lot to watch this. Like, the emotions of the show is very, you know, it can be a bit of a roller coaster. And so when when I binge, I often like to binge on comedy.
Okay.
It's easier. They're usually shorter episodes, but I definitely will support Queen Sugar. I definitely want to catch up. I just haven't had a chance to. So
I got you. Well, it's, you know, it's been great, you know, this season.
Dope.
I mean, it's my favorite show on TV right now, like by far. Like, you know what I mean?
Dope.
It's like, it's just a great show, the way it looks, the acting, the storylines. Like, it's just, you know, now, like, and just, you know, I really feel like really emotionally invested in the characters. Like, you know, I'm not gonna like get into the details about stuff that's happening, but because too much. But like, like, I really feel like I'm like their cousin in a room. Like, nah, you should be doing that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I really enjoy the show a lot. You know. Did you see the Puffy movie?
You know what? I got about 20 minutes left, so in theory, yes, I saw it.
What were your thoughts?
I thought it was pretty good. I wasn't blown away. You know, again, it's one of those things where I don't feel like we were here. We were there. We saw those things. We remember those things very vividly. That's not a lot of news to me. I do appreciate, you know, sort of seeing his peers like Jay really sort of commend him on how he raised the bar. And that's one of the things I've always talked about with Puff. You know, a lot of times people only see the fruits and they never really see the labor. Mm-hmm. And they only, you know, they see the houses, the cars, and the fly shit, and that's what he's, you know, he's selling, right? He's selling lifestyle, and I get it, but, like, people don't really see the work, and they don't see the meticulous nature and how he operates. So I think this has been an eye-opening experience for people who didn't really know that and didn't really get that. And again, man, like, dude really raised the bar for young executives, income, for what artists were getting, how labels were spending money. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it changed the game, bro.
Yeah, I mean, the big videos, the big, I mean,
all of that shit.
It was his vision to present black music visually on the same par as like the big rock acts and stuff was getting, like the big videos, the big tours, the expensive clothing. Like, it was like, why we don't have to be ghettoized and just have, like, you know, Luther in a suit and, you know, just a couple of dancers. Like, we could do like these really big kind of epic visuals and these epic, you know, movements and these epic parties and these epic, you know, projects, and you know, and not just have to be kind of like in the corner. You know, it was really, a lot of that was really him, you know.
Yeah.
And it's still, and, you know, you see in the kind of like how it's got you today with some of these younger artists, like how they, you know, they kind of like the rock star thing and all that. Like, I think a lot of that was spawned in him. I mean, those guys are too young to remember Puffy, but he's influencing them without them even kind of realizing it.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it was also,
I think
he was also, you know, he made having a label a reality, man. And that wasn't of, you know, there weren't a lot of people, man. And after his success, no label wanted to be the one who missed out on the next Puff. And so there was a lot of folks that got a lot of deals because of that.
Yeah.
And you had a lot of smaller imprints, and you had a lot of, you know, production deals, and, you know, they weren't necessarily label deals, but they were really sort of, you know, glorified production deals and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they got the shot. You know what I mean? They got the shot to do it and do it their way. And, you know, I often, you know, I get that people laugh at him, and, you know, they talk about the suits, and then they talk about, you know, how shrewd he is of a businessman. But, like, you know, guess what, man? Like, rich people don't get rich by letting money slip through their fingers. It's just not how it happens. It's just not how it happens. And what's crazy to me is that when it's white folks doing it, they're great businessmen. But when it's black folks doing it, they are, you know, bleeding their people. And they, you know, there's this sort of negative connotation that really sort of comes with having their lawyers be better than your lawyers.
Exactly. That's really what it's all about, you know?
At the end of the day, that's completely what it's all about. And I think that, you know, I liked it. I mean, I thought it was cool. And again, it's very, very, you know, it's hard for me to have a different perspective having sort of been around this shit and seen it.
Yeah, seen it up close and personal, you know?
Exactly.
Hey, so I wanted to mention this. Like, in the past few months, man, like, the MTA, the subway service in New York has been insanity. Like, it's like, yesterday, 2 days ago, it was a train derailment at 125th Street. There's been fires. There's been cars. There's been trains stuck on the ground for hours at a time. There's floods, you know, down there now. It's like, like the MTA is just, I don't know what's going on, man. The shit is,
well,
it's a fucking mess, man.
You know, look,
it's old, number one.
That is 1, 2, and 3. It's a poor infrastructure. They have, you know, they have not done well with balancing those books, clearly. Like, they're fucking spending money like crazy and not on the things that are necessary. Now, I don't necessarily...
Raising the prices all the time.
Yeah, and let me just say, too, while they are raising up prices, like, I do want to give folks a little bit of perspective. Like, it costs about what for a monthly pass?
I don't know. I actually don't know how much a subway pass costs. I never buy a monthly. I just buy like $20-$25 on a car.
Exactly.
Because I don't think it's, you know, enough. You know?
And so if you spend $130 a month or whatever to, like,
move
around
right.
the city, like, that's not, I mean, like, the subway is vast in New York. Like, there's really not lot of places that you can't get to without, you know, without using MTA. I mean, that's not a lot of money. Like, it's not a lot of money in the grand scheme of the access that you have. Now, sure, the service should be on time. You should have a dependable subway line, and you should have dependable buses. But yeah, man, I mean, I really think that if they started to look and comb in through those books, that you'll see that there's some not good shit going on, man. It's just no way.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, but again, I just think that because so many things have been happening in such a close period of time, like, you know, there's been delays on multiple lines. Like I said, there's trains getting stuck on the ground for like hours where people have to get off the train eventually and like walk through the tunnels to get off. And, you know, there's floods in the 6th train. It's like, it's all happening at once, you know,
When it rains, sooner or later, something drastic
is going to happen.
Well, listen,
you know,
man.
Like, you know?
Hey, that's just like a house. That's just like a house.
Sorry.
If you have a house and you living in a house for 25 years and you don't change the pipes and you don't change the roof and you don't change anything or tend to the house's infrastructure at all, guess what? Some shit's going to bust, and it's going to be, you know, a bad situation, like a real bad and expensive situation. Like, that's the thing about maintenance. Maintenance is a continual process to make sure that the infrastructure is as updated as possible. Like, they were saying that the signal that got lost across was like from 1939. seriously, think about that. You're riding on shit that was absolutely done, like when your grandparents were functioning and moving around in the city.
Your grandparents were young.
Yes, like they were vibrant.
Mad young. Yeah, they were mad young. They were like 19.
Yeah, like Nana and them was just out here when they did that.
Yeah, yeah, they was going to the club and shit, you know? So now they're also saying that starting when, but like really soon, like in the next couple of weeks or so, the two and the three train to stop running on the weekends from Harlem to Brooklyn.
Oh my God!
Yeah, like it's bananas, man. Because they're gonna do, I guess, what they try to do. There's so many repairs that they have to try to do them
during the weekends.
During the weekends. Yeah, so like literally on some, you know. Saturday, Sunday, you ain't gonna be get on the 2 or 3 and go to Brooklyn. It's bananas, man. I really try not to go underground too much at all, man.
Definitely making, because you know every now and again I'll jump on the train if I'm in the city and I'm moving around and I'm kind of like I got 20, 25 blocks I got to go south or 20, 25 blocks I got to go north.
Yeah, it's less of a hassle than to get the train or a cab or something.
Absolutely. So sometimes I'll just jump on the train, but now I'm good.
Yeah. Also, I've been noticing that there's definitely a campaign in New York that started with the Khalif Browder documentary and other things to really get Rikers done. Because it's like, if you look on the Daily News website, there's a different crazy Rikers stories pretty much every day. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, a guard is raping a chick. It's just raping a female inmate. It's like stuff. So like, but this story is crazy because there's a guy, I want to say his name right, Adidabel Saleem. He's 42 years old. He was arrested on November 21st, 2014 on a charge that he attacked the cop after the cop tried to arrest him for stealing a coat from Zara, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, his bail was initially set at $25,000. And he came back to court. When his next court date, they never brought him to court. So the jail, in one of his, was two different charges, the drug dropped the bail to $1. And then a couple of days later, they were supposed to bring him back to court and they didn't bring him again. And so the judge ordered him released on his own recognizance in the second case because the prosecutors had, you know, convened a jury trial within 144 hours. That's required by law. You get to walk out of there. And he had another court date a couple months later, and they didn't bring him again. So this guy has now been in jail for, like, all this time, like 4 years.
That's crazy.
And he had a dollar bail and didn't know it because they would never bring him to court. So he was never in front of the judge for the judge to tell.
Shit. All right, we back.
All right, so sadly, he's upstate now because he got convicted on that crime of assaulting a cop, felony assault charge. So he's up, he's doing serving 4 1/3 to 5 years in state prison, but he's also suing the city. Because, you know, he said he had a dollar bail and they never told him. So he could have been out.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, you know, doing as he do, maybe getting a better lawyer, spending more time with his family, or whatever. So.
Well, shit, if he served for that, he should be coming home soon. And then hopefully he can, you know, hopefully this will set him on the right track, man. He can get him a good settlement and you know, maybe start his life over.
I wonder if it, I mean, my thing, if I was, I mean, I don't ever want to be in that situation, but if I was, man, if I got a son, man, I'm leaving New York, man.
Well, hopefully, like, yeah.
Yeah,
hopefully he does. And I mean, this is sort of highlighting, and this is what I was saying about the reform, you know, closing Rikers again, you know, closing down the building, but keeping the institution alive doesn't really mean anything. You know what I mean?
It's going to be the same crazy shit happening, just you're just going to be putting people in a different building.
Like, just think about that. Like, think about that. That dude literally was sitting in jail and could have been home for a dollar. A dollar. Yeah. And
nobody told him.
And nobody told him on multiple occasions. So where was his public defender if he had one? Where was his attorney if he had one? Like, to me, this is you cannot tell me this is not blatantly people being railroaded. Blatantly. This is not mismanagement. This is a continual thing that the penal institution in New York has done to continue to keep their beds full and their pockets lined. So they can miss me with all of that other bullshit. Like, dude, get the fucking reform going or get out of my face. I don't give a fuck if you close Rikers and make one. And you going to just make five more Rikers when you put them in the different boroughs. Mm-hmm. It don't matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it don't matter. It's still going to be crazy in there.
So,
like I said, it don't even matter. It's still going to be crazy inside. It doesn't matter at all. So,
yeah.
God bless, man. Jesus Christ, man. It's like New York is going crazy, though. It's like, oh, man. Every time I don't look at the Daily News website that much, honestly. But
yeah,
whenever I do, I'm just like, what the hell is going on? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just crazy out here, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. So,
crazy. Crazy, yeah, man. So BET Awards, could we end it with that? So you were out there.
Yeah,
you know, I didn't go this year. I just watched on TV. How was it being out there?
The vibe was, you know, I don't really do a lot of parties. The parties are not really. Hold on. Yeah. The parties, it's not really something, you know, I do a lot of, but I can say, man, I've been to LA, you know, for a few award shows, and the energy was just different. The energy wasn't the same excitement or level of star power, I would say, that you would normally see. There was for a really short time, sort of like in the beginning of the BET Awards, it was kind of like a glorified Soul Train Awards, right? So you had niggas in t-shirts and baggy jeans and shit like that.
Yeah.
And then there was a part, there was a few years where the BET was like super fucking sexy. Like every A-list black talent was there. There was a real sexiness to the red carpet. There was a real vibe to it, and almost like it was the buzz, and it did not feel like that to me this year.
What do you think that was?
I think it's multiple things. I think that you have listen, we can't deny the fact that Stephen Hill and his affiliation and how he navigates talent means a lot. It means a lot. I definitely feel like people just, I don't know, man. I can't really put my finger on it. That was the only thing that sort of stood out to me as the one thing. And I lost Jeff again.
I don't know where it cut off.
So, yeah, I mean, I was just saying that the one thing I will say, I mean, that's the only Stephen Hill's absence and sort of the way his departure was with BET was a part of that.
Okay. You should wait. Hold on. Why is it doing that?
Yo.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the only common denominator that I could think of off the top of my head. But, you know, I don't know, man. The energy surrounding some things. And listen, I didn't go to every party. That's not really my bag. I'm not a party guy. I was kind of disappointed I missed the Puffy thing. But that was like the night we came in. You know, I was a little beat, man. You know, that, you know, flying into the West Coast, man, that 3-hour difference kind of can have a foot in your ass.
Yeah, it definitely catches up to you.
Yeah, so that was a, you know, that and then I went to we went to the Deborah Lee party, which was cool. It was nice. You know, that's a little more of a not really an artist crowd, I would say. I mean, that's really there's talent there, but there are more executives there. There are more people sort of behind the scenes, and it was cool. But again, man, the vibe was just, it wasn't popping. And peace to you, man. I saw your man, Mr. Clarence, Clarence Avon.
Clarence Avon.
Yeah, he was coming off the elevator. I wanted to give him a shout. I said, hey, you know Sledge, you know. But I said, no. He's with his old lady. Yeah, Mr. Clarence with his old lady, man. They was coming off the elevator, man. So, you know, it was sort of those sorts of people that came in sort of early on in the night. And then, you know, again, you had a lot of talent, a lot of reality folks, a lot of, you know, actors, actresses, yeah, things like that. D Nice was spinning for the second part of that party. So he was there, you know, always good to see him. And I mean, I laid low, man, for the most part, man. I laid low.
Yeah. I mean, again, just watching, you know, from the internet, you know what I'm saying? It definitely didn't feel, I mean, we'll get into the show, but it was a couple of things about the show that I definitely saw that were, you know, hello?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm sure I got you. It was a couple of things about the show that were definitely different this year, and I believe these are, like I said, due to the lack of Steven being there. Number one, and I'm talking about the show in and of itself, not the, you know, drama, anything happening around the show. But number one, since that show's inception, they have always had, in the middle of that show, a big gospel performance.
Yep.
Whether it was Kirk, Tam the Man, or Ty Trippett, or yeah, you know, Donnie McCurk, or whoever, Yolanda Adams, there's always a big gospel moment in that show because gospel music, and obviously, you know, the church is a huge part of Black culture. And this year, there was no gospel performance. I mean, they gave the Crane Award. That took all of 30 seconds. And then I was like, oh, that's wild. There's no gospel performance this year, you know? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Let's make sure you're still there.
Yeah.
The second thing I noticed is there wasn't the, they gave out a couple of awards. They gave an award out to the Bennett brothers, Michael and Martellus for through their community service, which they deserve, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they gave an award out to, the gal from Harlem. I apologize for blanking on her name now. No, she's part of the National Action Network and stuff as well. But what they usually also do is they give out awards to like Black folks that are doing things in the community that aren't like kind of known.
Yeah.
So to be like a doctor or like a teacher or, you know, like a,
right,
you know, somebody who's a social activist, or, you know, and they didn't do that this year either. So I was like, I'm not saying the Bennett brothers and the other girls shouldn't have gotten an award, but they kind of gave those awards out throughout the show usually.
I didn't even think about that.
The army, and they did it, you know, whatever, you know?
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but that was missing. I definitely noticed the gospel thing, and I really kind of thought afterward that the gospel thing might have been the fact that, you know, when they did those gospel performances, that they had a gospel program, whether it was, you know, Bobby Jones,
oh, yeah,
or whether it was Sunday Best, there was a tie-in. And it felt like, sort of like, they didn't really have a tie-in, so it was like, we good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Another thing I noticed is, with Steven being there, it felt like that he would go, first of all, he would go out of his way to kind of have these moments. Remember, it was years ago when he had the cast of Good Times came, and Janet Jackson came up there, you know, like a Penny or... you know, he'd have other people from like sitcoms that, you know, we all knew and stuff, kind of, you know, like years ago, I mean, yeah, like the Cosby Kids and stuff like that, you know, kind of reunite. That was gone, you know what I'm saying? They didn't do that. And he always seemed to have, moments where like he would do these cross promotions. Like, for example, like who knows if it was Steve could have pulled this off, but I would have expected like the whole cast of Queen Sugar to like come up and present an award, you know?
Well, you know, some of the things
or some of the cast from Black Panther to kind of be there,
but let
you
me
know, or the cast of Insecure, the kind of some of them to be there. Now, I know Issa Rae was there, but that was the only one that was there, and I know that Queen Sugar, the guy that plays Ralph Angel was there. But usually, like, he would kind of have it so it would be, like, you know, a bunch of them there. It's kind of like us, a whole kind of thing that you kind of see, especially the Black Panther thing. Like, I'm like for like Lupita and, you know, Chadwick Boseman. Chadwick Boseman was there, but like for Lupita, some of the other ones to not be there was like, you know, oh, well, shit. Like, I don't, because Chadwick Boseman was there. It's almost like, is he representing Black Panther, or is he representing the Thurgood Marshall movie, which is coming out as well? I don't know.
I mean, that can be a little tricky, just sort of speaking from, you know, a logistics standpoint. One, you know, to sort of coordinate all of those people. Sometimes Steven was able to catch lightning in a bottle, right? Like, you are out in L.A., and so you have all of these people who are based in L.A., and what that really means is you're only taking in ground transportation costs. You're not taking in travel costs.
Maybe a day room at a hotel.
Yeah, I mean, and
it could be close to the venue.
Yeah, you know? And that's about it, right? Like, so other than that, I mean, I do think that it could be a little tricky and a little hard. I also can say that for the most part, man, a lot of shows, award shows, are not immune to this. They're being told to do more with less, like any other business. You know, we need to tighten up the reins on these budgets. So you might have been feeling that, but I think aside from that, I think there was always something about, you know, I always felt like there was something sexy over the last few years about the BET Awards. Like, it was the place to be. It was like the family reunion. You know what I'm saying? It was
absolutely,
the one.
Absolutely.
And I didn't feel that. I definitely felt like this was, you know what it felt like? It felt like when you've been going to your local, you know, your club that you normally go to, you have a great time, and then the young kids find out about the club, and then they start coming to the club. Yeah. And now it's kind of like, wait a minute, why am I hearing raindrop? Drop top. You know what I'm saying? You're like, what the fuck is
that? I don't want to hear that here. I like that song, but not tonight.
That's what it felt like. And I'm not mad at all, but that's what it felt like. It felt like a sense or like a changing of the guard. I'll also say, too, and lastly on that point, is that there wasn't, in my opinion, there was not a big record this year so far. Meaning, like, Anti and Lemonade was last year. There was not that sort of massive,
big. Because Kendrick's record is big, but it already came out.
If we're being real, Kendrick's shit came and went, right? I mean, no shots to it, but it wasn't an album that was a statement. Like, it wasn't this big thing. And I don't think we had that this year with anybody. You know what I'm saying? So
Yeah, that too. So, I mean, again, from watching, it looked like it was a decent show, but it was elements missing, you know what I mean? Like,
I have to say
the George Michael tribute to me was terrible because L's pipes are gone. He didn't look good. Looked like he needed a haircut. Like, he just didn't look good. Nigga hair wasn't tight. And I say that because, I saw Steven at the Grammys. He came to our Grammy party, the Warner Brothers Grammy party. And we always talk when we see each other. And George Michael had just died at that point, like, very recently. And he said to me, who should I do for the George Michael tribute? Because remember, Adele did the George Michael tribute at the Grammys.
Yeah.
And we were both kind of like, it was cold, but like, you know, I mean, it's Adele, so you know what I'm saying? But like, I could have been way doper. Like, she just did Fast Car Slow Down. Like, they didn't do none of the other shit. And so he was like, yo, who should I get to do the George Michael tribute at the Grammys? And we were kind of like throwing names around. And he was like, yo, like, think about it, really think about it, and then, like, you know, send me a text and let me know what you think. Like, you know, I really want to blow it out. So I'm just saying all that to say, when I saw what they did, me, you know, again, me knowing, obviously, I had these conversations with Steven, it wasn't like, you know, I was like, see, that's quite different. Because Steven wouldn't have did that. He wouldn't have had L come out there. He would have made that a moment.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I agree. You know? I mean, and also, too, just while we're talking about the show, and I've sort of said this before to you guys, I listen, I can, I appreciate Leslie Jones's ascension, and I appreciate her success, because like I've always said, she really has grinded and really, you know, done shit. It's been out here. Like, she's been out here. So I applaud that, right? But she was not good here. And it showed, man. Like, it was just hard. That monologue was hard to get through. It was really hard to get through. And I think there was possibly some nerves. But, you know, I don't know how much nerves. I mean, she literally does a live television show every week. So, you know.
No, but even that, even see that, but that's a whole different audience from a bunch of your people watching.
Well, I think.
I'm saying that live, that's not a black audience. That's like, you know, she gets out there, does her little segments. This is the whole black community watching you.
And it definitely, well, it felt, and it felt like the crowd had the make me laugh nigga look on their face, because I don't know, man. It just felt like she was swinging and missing, and it was really, it was hard to watch, man. I don't have another word for it. It was hard to watch. I enjoy not taking yourself too seriously. Some things being self-deprecating, right? But that, you know, like, it feels like that's her shtick. Like, everything, that's her shtick. Every, you know, the little comedy sketches that they did, and, you know, it's just, God bless her, but it was hard to watch. That part was hard to watch.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I'm talking shit, but I don't even know if Steven, Steven would even have made, you know what I'm saying? I think a lot of that stuff happened after he was gone. I'd be surprised if that was his idea.
I'll put it to you like this.
I think I'm surprised if it was.
If I had to bet what's in my pocket right now, I would say that all of that happened afterward. I think there was some initial things that took place. Like, it was crazy was that even the Bruno moment, which was really sort of the only moment of the show, in my opinion, right? Like, it just didn't feel the same. It did not feel the same. I don't know why. I don't know, man. It just didn't feel the same.
Yeah. What do you think about the New Edition tribute?
Look, love New Edition. Don't need to see them again on stage. Don't need to see him again on stage. I really don't. Okay, guys, like, we get it, and we have. I just feel like now we're getting into the phase of overappreciation, if that's a word, where it's just like, okay, guys, we, you know, let's stop. You know, we get it. We appreciate it. We know what you guys have done. We know what you guys mean to the culture. We know what you guys have been able to bridge for the culture. But I didn't need to see the bigs, the littles, and the real New Edition on stage all doing the choreography. I was good on that.
Yeah.
But God bless.
Yeah, because it's like, yo, man, we just had the movie. It's like,
Literally. I mean,
the movie was in January, right? So we just had the movie a few months ago, and we all really enjoyed the movie. It was really well done. Really well done. It was excellent. But it's like, all right, we just had that basically was like, you got your honor. We got a movie. You got a three-part movie. Like, God, like,
and then, now we gotta for do them this shit to too. And then, honestly, I would have been good with the littles. And the bigs performing, right? And I'd have been like, all right, cool, nice little tribute. But then for them to get on stage and perform, it was kind of just like, all right, guys, I mean, you know, we've literally seen them on stage. It feels like every award show. It's just, okay.
I agree, bro. I agree.
Well, we luckily Nye ain't here, because Nye would have been a
cut. Yeah, should have cursed us out. Should have cursed us out. Like, you know, fuck y'all. I'm good. I'm good. Thank you, New Edition. I'm good. I appreciate you. I love you. I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. I'm so good. I'm seeing y'all niggas anymore. I'm straight. You know? Word. So that's it, man. I think, you know, not a long show today. We're going to wrap it up. We just want to get something to everybody for the holiday weekend. Happy July 4th to everybody.
Yep.
You know? And we will see y'all. Well, shit, the 4th is Tuesday. I guess I'm trying to see y'all the 5th or the 6th next week.
Yep. All right. All right. Peace.
All right, man.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast. Talk to you next week.